this beautiful, beautiful purse? Last night I told you about a beautiful purse. I have it in plastic. A beautiful purse that Mrs. Loazo brought me from Israel when I was between the ages of 3 and 8. So I know it's over 40 years old. And you look at this purse and you say, she called that beautiful. She called that purse beautiful. I'm going to pass it around. I'll let you look at my beautiful purse. But you know, this purse has fading beauty. It's a purse of fading beauty. It means a lot to me, but it has fading beauty. I'll start with you here, Debbie. And you may pass it around, and if it ends up with my sister-in-law, sister-in-law, raise your hand. Yeah. So you know where it has to end up. Because I will know if that purse is missing after all these years. And last night, we talked about an unfading beauty. So today, I want to talk about the reflection gets clearer. Last night, we talked about the reflection, and all of us are called upon to reflect God's grace. But men are called upon specifically to reflect God's movement, and women are called upon specifically to reflect God's beauty. And so when we talked about reflecting last night, we said it was an image of something, a likeness of something. And last night we talked just briefly about, well, we'll hit it all again today. My beautiful, beautiful purse is being passed around, and it is a purse of faded beauty. In 1 Peter 3:4, we're told that we're to have unfading beauty. And what is Peter referring to in 1 Peter 3:4 when he talks about unfading beauty? Instead, it should be your inner self, the unfading beauty of a gentle and a quiet spirit. For this is the way the holy women of the past who put their hope in God used to make themselves beautiful. They were submissive to their own husbands, like Sarah, who obeyed Abraham and called him her master. We talked about a gentle and a quiet spirit being exactly the opposite of a contentious and a vexing spirit in Proverbs 21:19. It says, a vexing and a contentious woman. And now it says we're to be a woman who is gentle and quiet, not contentious and vexing. And the opposite of contentious, remember, a contentious woman is a woman who carries the rule book in her pocket. She's the umpire. And the opposite of a contentious woman is a woman with a gentle spirit. A woman who's vexing never forgets. Keeps bringing it up. It's called, when you look up vexing in the dictionary, it says troubling, bubbling. Just bringing it up and bringing it up and bringing it up. And the opposite of that is a quiet woman. What really is the beauty of our souls that gets better with age in the different seasons of our life? What really is that unfading beauty? Wrinkles? I have a picture here of Mother Teresa that one of my husband's students did for us years ago. And it's a gorgeous picture of Mother Teresa, but she's not very pretty. But she's beautiful. She's beautiful. And I know you can't see Mother Teresa from here. One of our students was a pencil artist. And she did that for us. And I look at it all the time and I think, that woman is so beautiful. And she put the Bible verse with it, the one that Jesus said, come unto me, all ye that labor and are heavy laden, and I will give you rest. And I know that Jesus has promised that to Mother Teresa. Come unto me, all you that labor and are heavy laden, and I will give you rest. What makes growing old a wonderful thing? You know, Betty Friedan is wrong in her new book. Did you read her new book? The Fountain of Aging, I think it's called. One of those real important titles. The Fountain of Aging. And in that, when she talks about, she never talks about the beauty of a woman. So therefore, it's not biblical. Because women are to reflect God's beauty. That's biblical. Not that we would have expected Betty Friedan to write with a biblical perspective. Now, let's get back to unfading beauty in 1 Peter 3:5. In 1 Peter 3:5, it says, we're to have an unfading beauty of a gentle and a quiet spirit, which is great worth in God's sight. Woo! For this is the way the holy women of the past who put their hope in God used to make themselves beautiful with that gentle and quiet spirit. They were submissive to their own husbands. Isn't that wonderful? It just says your own husband. That's hard enough. But imagine some of the people trying to be submissive to other people's husbands. It's just not the way it is. It says your own husband. I like that word there. There are only two times that women were told to be in submission, and that's in a church authority and to our own husbands. Like Sarah. I like Sarah, who obeyed Abraham and called him her master. Sarah is the only woman in Scripture that we're told to pattern our lives after. Think about it. There's no other woman in Scripture that we're told to pattern our lives after, except Sarah. And you know, there are more verses in the Bible about Sarah than any other woman. Let's go back to Genesis 12. Remember, I told you I like Genesis, as you found out. I've taught it five times in church Bible studies. I like Genesis. Genesis 12. We want to talk about Sarah a little bit today. And we know that she was a beautiful woman because in Genesis 12, verses 10 to 20, it says, now there was a famine in the land, and Abraham went down to Egypt to live there for a while because of the famine was severe. As he was about to enter Egypt, he said to his wife Sarai, I know that you are a beautiful woman. When the Egyptians see you, they will say, this is his wife. Then they will kill me, but will let you live. So say that you're my sister, so that I will be treated well for your sake, and my life will be spared because of you. When Abraham came to Egypt, the Egyptians saw that she was a very beautiful woman. Now, remember how old Sarah was at this point in time. She was at least 65. Hi, Mother Teresa. She was at least 65 at this point. And she was a very beautiful woman. In fact, if you figure it out using all the other dates, you'll find out that she was at least 68. Do we call 68-year-old women beautiful? Do we see many of them on the covers of magazines? If it's not Newsweek or Time, we don't see too many people 68 on the cover. Well, nowadays you do because they all get the nip and tucks, and it just is so wonderful. And I'm going for it myself, ladies. I'm just going to tell you right now, when it comes that time, I don't want to be a chicken like my mother. I'm going for that, whatever that is. And I keep telling my sister, who's 58, I say, you need to have that done. Please. You are my sister, and we look a little alike. Very little. She's beautiful. And we look a little alike, and you must get rid of that. Anyway, that's side one of the alleys. Where were we with Sarah? Sarai. When Abram came to Egypt, the Egyptians saw that she was a very beautiful woman. And when Pharaoh's officials saw her, they praised her to Pharaoh, and she was taken into his palace. He treated Abraham well for her sake, and Abraham acquired sheep and cattle, male and female donkeys, men servants, male servants, maid servants, and camels. But the Lord inflicted serious diseases on Pharaoh and his household because of Abraham's wife Sarai. So Pharaoh summoned Abraham. What have you done to me? He said. Why didn't you tell me she was your wife? Why did you say she is your sister? Half-truth. So that I took her in to be my wife. Now then, here is your wife. Take her and go. Then Pharaoh gave orders about Abram to his men, and they sent him on his way with his wife and everything he had. Often in our lives, past, present choices are contaminated by past sins and traditional background. Abraham and Sarai, their life was influenced by a prior sin. You see it here? You see the prior sin? When Abraham gave Sarai to Pharaoh gave him male servants and maid servants. Where did Hagar come from? Egypt. Hagar came as a direct result of this lie that was told, half-truth that was told. And that was a prior sin that influenced their lives forever. How many of us have prior sins that influence our lives forever? An influence there, prior sin, male servant, maid servants, were brought from Egypt. Pharaoh gave them many gifts. And remember what Isaiah says. Isaiah says, "Woe to him who goes to Egypt for help." Egypt is the sign of doing it your own way, being in control. And isn't it interesting, being a contentious woman? Sarai in the original means contentious. Sarai was just like us. She had to do it her way. She had to be in control. And Sarai is contentious. Sarah is princess. But Sarai, up until chapter 17, is contentious. And what did we say the contentious woman of Proverbs 21 was last night? The woman who carries the rule book in her pocket. And she calls all the shots. She yells off sides. Just like us. And we say, "I'm going to take over because I want to be in control and I know what's best because I'm contentious." Also in here, there was a cultural background that came into play. Present choices in a cultural background. Listen to this. Ancient tablets of Babylon, of Babylonian laws were found, and it was legally expected that if a wife could not bear heir, she was obligated to give her husband another woman. Ancient tradition, tablets. Can you picture the discussion between Abraham and Sarah? Because as we move on and they are out of Egypt, and they've now moved on, it was 10 years. I think we ought to look at it. We just aren't going to talk about it. We're going to look at it. Well, we're going to hit it eventually. I'm just going to do the overheard conversation. I can picture Abraham saying, "You know, it's been 10 years now and the Lord hasn't given me an heir." And Sarah said, "Well, Hagar is available." And Abraham says, "After all our friends are doing it is part of the Babylonian laws." And Sarah says, "God's plan calls for you to have an heir. It says nothing about me." And sometimes sin looks so good. There's a way which seems right unto a man, but the end thereof are the ways of death. Proverbs 9:17 says, "Stolen waters are sweet, and bread in it eaten in secret is pleasure, is pleasant." What's going on here? Sarah took things into her own hand. Not only did she break God's law, a prior sin and a traditional background of a Babylonian law caused her to do something else. She broke a psychological law. A psychological law she broke. Genesis 16, that's where we were heading before. Genesis 16, verses 4 to 13. Da-da-da-da-da-da. Abram agreed to what Sarah said when Sarah said that she should go. He should have Hagar. So after Abram had been living in Canaan for 10 years, Sarah, his wife, took her Egyptian maidservant Hagar and gave her to her husband to be his wife, and he slept with Hagar, and she conceived. When she knew she was pregnant, she began to despise her mistress. Then Sarah said to Abram, "You are responsible for the wrong I am suffering. I put my servant in your arms, and now that she knows she is pregnant, she despises me. May the Lord judge between you and me." "Your servant is in your hands," Abram said. "Do with her whatever you think best." Then Sarai mistreated Hagar, so she fled from her. And it goes on and on till Sarah Hagar was told to come back. This is a psychological law that Sarai broke. Let's look at Proverbs 30. And I'll show you the psychological laws that she broke. Proverbs 30. Verse 21, it says, three things make the earth tremble and one thing makes it quake. The one thing that makes the earth quake is when a maidservant supplants her mistress. And we've been having a rift in the Middle East for a long time, thanks to Hagar the Arab, the Egyptian, and Isaac the Israelite. And that signing of the peace treaty last week was going to do nothing. Because God says, the earth will quake when a maidservant supplants her mistress. Let's look at those verses a little bit. Verse 21, let's go with them. Under three things the earth trembles. Under four, it cannot bear up. A servant who becomes a king, when a slave becomes a king, what happens to him? A cross-reference for that would also be Proverbs 19:10. The earth trembles when a slave becomes the king. The earth trembles when a fool is full of food. The earth trembles. The earth trembles when an unloved woman gets married. And the earth quakes when a maidservant supplants her mistress. Sarai broke a psychological law. She had a maidservant who supplanted her, and she despised the maidservant, and the maidservant despised her, and as I said, that is the cause of what's been happening since the beginning of time in the Middle East. Egypt and Israel will never get along. They can sign all the wonderful peace treaties that they want to sign. But God says it caused an earthquake. An unloved woman who gets married. Single gals, be sure to claim the love of God if you've been brought up in a loveless home. Meditate on it. Nothing can separate me from the love of God. Bask in God's love. You're going to scare those fellows because you're such a loved woman. As a child, I was sexually molested for 4 years, from the time I was 8 till I was 12, by a neighbor. Therefore, you better take care of me, because I'm a victim and I've been wounded, and you better take care of me. No. What's more important is not my wounds. What's more important is my sin. And we get so busy today dwelling on our wounds that we forget we're sinners. Anyway, people said to me, I didn't remember it till 7 years ago. And people said to me, how did you get over it? I don't know if I'm ever over it. But how did I get over it? I take Proverbs 30. Because you see, I was a loved woman. I was a loved woman. My parents never told me they loved me. They don't go around hugging and kissing. But I knew I was loved by them. And I married a man who loves me very much. And so I believe that's how I got over my past. I have friends who have been abused, and they haven't gotten over it, and they weren't abused 4 times a week for 4 years like I was. And they've gotten over it. They haven't gotten over it. And they say, Rachel, how'd you get over it? And all I can claim is that God put me in a family where I was well loved. My parents do not know. My parents are too old to know. There comes a time my parents are too old. I was at a group. I was at a luncheon. And I was sitting at the table. And I had told a group of women, 9 women, they were all wearing the badge of sexual abuse. And they were having their own little clique at the end of the table. And I said, for the first time in my life, I blurted out and I said, you think you've been abused? Step into my shoes, baby. I've been the victim for a long time and a lot. And they all got quiet. And I told them the name of the man. They had a luncheon for me. I was working on Christian Women's Club testimonies with them. Nine women. And they had a luncheon for me. And they had me sitting at the head of the table, and my mother came. And my mother was sitting right here next to me. And they said, "Mrs. Langford, tell us all about Rachel's childhood." And my mother turned her back, and my mother doesn't talk a whole lot. But she turned her back, and she was ready to talk about me. And she said, "Why, Rachel was the only little girl in the neighborhood." Because, see, I thought maybe it was a false memory syndrome or something. And she said, "Rachel was the only little girl in the neighborhood. And do you know, all the men loved her." And she named this man's name. And my girls, the nine girls, go, and I went, "My mother does not know." And they just kept going on, looked at my mother, and went on, and I said, "I know it's not a false memory. But how did I get over it? God's grace." I still have mouth sores to this day. From the time I've been 8 years old, every time I go under stress, I get mouth sores. And I know what they come from. And I break out in mouth sores. I've been in audiences where I've had physicians say to me, "I have the medicine for you. I got it for you." And I have more bottles of medicine. There's a wonderful female physician in Tampa, Florida, named Dr. Ruth Perry. And she just went out and got me the prescription right away before she even came back. I also walk and talk in my sleep. I have nightmares. And didn't know that I had nightmares. Well, I did. I knew I was having them. And I was sleeping in a motel room with my niece, Rachel, and my mother. And I had the bed to myself, and Rachel and my mother were in the other bed. And I woke myself up having a nightmare. And my mother said to Rachel, "Oh, your Aunt Rachel has such a busy mind. She just never shuts it off. She's been doing that since she was 8 years old." I thought, oh, 8 years old. What happened when I was 8 years old? Why do I have this busy mind I don't shut off? I came home from Longview, Texas, and I said to Larry, "Whew, something must have happened when I was 8 years old, because my mother said that was when I started my nightmares." And I knew that was when I started my mouth herpes, because I wore gingivviolet. Do you know what gingivviolet is? That purple stuff that stains your teeth, stains your lips, stains your tongue. All the kids in second grade were told, "Stay away from Rachel Langford. She has a mouth disease." Because I had to wear gingivviolet. And I said, "Oh, I know what happened. When I was 8 years old, my three big brothers and sisters all left home. They were my security blanket. They went away to college. And I was home without them." An unloved woman, when she gets married, will put such a demand on that man she marries to come through for her that the earth is going to tremble. The earth is going to tremble. But the worst thing of all is when a maidservant supplants her mistress, the earth is going to quake. And it has. Sarai broke a psychological law. Genesis 17. Let's go back to Genesis now. We always take these little sidetracks. Genesis 17. I want to look at verses 15. I should mark. This is my new Bible. I've had it for 2 years, but I've never used it. Last year at Bible study, I used to sit next to a woman named Vicki Varney, who used to turn the pages for me. She said, "Rachel, bring your new Bible so we can break it in." And so I'd bring my new Bible so we could break it in Pat's core group. And we would break it in. I mean, she would turn the pages, because I can't turn the pages in this. And you always know a person's old when they go like this. I saw some little boy one time going. And I said, "What's up, Tom?" And he said, "That's the way when you get old, you turn the pages." He was only 5 years old. So he had been observing. Genesis 17, 15. God said to Abraham, "As for Sarai, your wife, you are no longer to call her Sarai. Her name will be Sarah. I will bless her and will surely give you a son by her. I will bless her so that she will be the mother of many nations. Kings of peoples will come from her." Abraham fell down, face down, and he laughed. And he said to himself, Will a son be born to a man 100 years old? Will Sarah bear a child at the age of 90? And Abraham said to God, "If only Ishmael might live under your blessing." God said, I'll take care of Ishmael. I'll take care of Ishmael. But I want to talk to you about Sarai and the baby you're going to have named Isaac. We go into chapter 18, verse 10. Then the Lord said, I will surely return to you. And you know the visitors that came to the tent and all that. Then the Lord said, I will surely return to you about this time next year, and Sarah, your wife, will have a son. Now Sarah was listening at the entrance to the tent, which was behind him. Abraham and Sarah were already old and well advanced in years, and Sarah was past the age of childbearing. So Sarah laughed to herself as she thought, after I am worn out and my master is old, will I now have this pleasure? And the Lord said to Abraham, why did Sarah laugh and say, will I really have a child now that I am old? Is anything too hard for the Lord? I will return to you at the appointed time next year, and Sarah will have a son. This is the time she talks to him. She calls him master. 1 Peter 3:5, it says, and be like Sarah, who called Abraham master. Here's where she calls master. And she said, after I'm old, I'm worn out, and my master is old, will I now have this pleasure? What does it mean? Sex? Yeah. She laughed. So she thought, will I have this pleasure? And God said, I'll be back in 1 year from now, which means a baby takes 9 months to be made. They had 3 months to get together. No wonder she laughed. We have 3 months to get together. And we've been together for years and years and years, and now in 3 months that we're 90 and 100, shall I have this pleasure again with my master? That's unfading beauty. That's what it refers to the holy women of old in 1 Peter 3, who had an unfading beauty, as Sarah, who called Abraham master. 1 year from now, they're going to have a baby. But they have 3 months to get ready for this baby. When did Sarah call him master? When she referred to a total act of submission with a gentle and a quiet spirit. If we line up all the pretty women in the world, we look at their physical appearance. But God looks on the heart. My son was 15 years old, and I know, isn't it amazing how you can pinpoint a time that was the destruction in your child's life, an event that you saw destruction come? Those of you who have children or who have friends who have children, they can usually say, I said to a friend whose daughter ended up in the Dominican Republic on drugs, had a baby out of wedlock and many, many things, and the parents went broke taking care of this girl and this situation. And I said, what was the situation? Can you pick an incident in her life that was the downfall? And they said, oh, yes. Just like that. They said, oh, yes. 10th grade. I said, 10th grade? What happened in 10th grade that you could pick such a perfect downfall point in time? Beautiful voice, went to a competition for youth that the church denomination held every year. Big competition. And competed. And you got first place for the Central District of the United States, you know, different places. And you were big on what district you came from because you got points for them by winning prizes. And she sang. And she sang absolutely beautifully, and the entire delegation gave her a standing ovation. Another girl whose father was a preacher in the denomination won
purse spot. And they said, we saw when that happened in our daughter's life, we watched. We watched what happened. She decided, on this Christianity stuff, yeah, she was only 15, her motives were wrong. Give her a break. She then lived in hell for a good 4 or 5 years. Our son was giving a devotional for a youth group, and he chose for his passage, this is the downfall, remember? The downfall of our son. He chose for his passage, and I can only talk to you now because our son is glorious. He's 25 years old. He's absolutely walking with the Lord in wonderful ways. He's going to get married January 1st. We have terrific things to bless. And I feel so badly for the people who say, but I can tell you the story, and it's all changed for the good. Because there are a lot of you sitting out there that don't have the good side of the story yet with the kids. Does that mean I'm more blessed with you than you? No. It doesn't mean a thing. God, he said he sowed. God was the perfect father, and he sowed grapes, and up came wild grapes. Look at the children of Israel. Was it his fault? No, he was the perfect father, and he had wild grapes. I wasn't the perfect mother, but I have a wild grape. I had a wild grape. I was giving a devotional, and he chose the wrong passage from Samuel. When he said, God looketh on the outward appearance, God looketh on the heart, but man looketh on the outward appearance. And that was the whole thing he bounced off for his little devotional. And he said, you know, he said, if we took everyone in this youth group, 150 kids, and we took them all upstairs and lined them up in front of the church, say, pick out the spiritual ones, they'd pick out the ones that they saw here all the time. And that's who they'd pick out. And they'd say, that person's spiritual. That person I never see here. And he said, that's because they're looking on the outward appearance, but God looks on the heart. And he said, a lot of you guys who are here, every time the church doors open, he said, I go to school with you. And I know you. And he said, God's looking on the heart, and you're fooling all the people in the church. Came home, we got a phone call. The youth pastor called that night and says, I don't ever want to hear any devotionals like that again. Do you know what happened to my son? He said, am I going to go to youth group again? Am I going to participate in anything in this church again? No way. His spirit was broken. Death words. Proverbs 21. Death words are life. Death and life are in the power of the tongue. And what happened? I watched him. We watched him go downhill, and we couldn't do a thing about it. When he went, he went. You weren't living with us at that time, were you? Part of it. Went fast. He went fast. Another incident. He was always on student council in the high school, running for vice president of the student class, of the student body. He lost by 2 points. They had to register in their school to vote in order to vote. And of course, he was now getting himself in with the gang that didn't register to vote. And he no longer had the support of the good guys. He was making movement all right, but he wasn't showing God's movement. How did I get off on that? Okay, we'll just call it a quit right here. How did I get off on that? Sarah. Ishmael. I don't know. There's something inside that reflects beauty. Oh, I got onto that verse. God looketh on the heart, and man looketh on the outward appearance. And that's where we all went tumbling from there. I told you I go down main streets and take lots of alleys. But we'll mainly stick in Genesis and 1 Peter and a little bit of Proverbs. I'll try to keep it sort of consolidated where we're going. Does the reflection get clearer as we see what's called unfading beauty? Unfading beauty is from the inner self, That's what God sees. Yeah, I'm going to go have nip and tucks in a few years. God doesn't care about that. In fact, He made me the way I am, and some of you might say, maybe you shouldn't go do that, Rachel. I'll just work a little harder. Does the reflection get clear of what unfading beauty is? Look at that story of Abraham and Sarah. I love to go through the whole thing of ruining a relationship, and it just takes hours to do, but I love to do that whole thing with Abraham and Sarah. Ladies, we're to reflect God's grace in the seasons of our life. And there's something inside of us that's to reflect beauty. Something unfading. Not like my little purse that went around that I call beautiful, but it's faded. We're to have an unfaded beauty that gets better and better and better in the seasons of our life. They're rough times. And it's so easy to understand and realize beauty when things are going good. But when things are going poorly, as we heard this morning from Brenda in a situation, and in our family we've had two plane crashes. Phoebe's husband was in the plane crash in Colorado Springs 2.5 years, the United 585, and my brother and his wife were killed in an airplane crash. But even in those moments, I'll never forget the first thing I did when I saw Phoebe is when she fainted into our arms because she was waiting at the airport. We got a call in church, and we went running to the airport. My husband was supposed to be in Dallas, and I was supposed to be in Florida that afternoon we were leaving. We went to the airport, and we said, where are the people who were the relatives of the people from the plane crash this morning? We didn't know at that point that Bill was gone. And they said, where are the people? And the guy said, oh, they're back in that room. And we went back and banged on the door, and the guard wouldn't let us in. And Phoebe was waiting there for us because she knew she was coming, and she refused to go to the Red Lion with everyone else. So she was there by herself. And Larry and I were trekking all over town trying to find her. And it was the guard at that door that told my husband his brother was dead. When my brother said, what about the crash? What happened? And they said, no survivors. Well, anyhow, the first thing when Phoebe finally found out where we were sending messages back and forth. And somehow there was a lot of lack of communication. Big time. And we were sending messages back and forth trying to find her. And we were afraid to leave there in case she came. And when she came in, the first thing she did as she fell into my husband's arms, Phoebe said, God is sovereign. And I thought, that has impressed me so much. That was the first thing she said, was God is sovereign and He's in charge. How many of us believe it when plane crashes, when helicopters crash, that God is sovereign? Not many of us. We go, God, why did you do that to me? And we walk around with a clenched fist. And that is not beautiful. Because we're told to reflect His beauty. He is sovereign. That was the most fantastic statement I'd heard. I kept repeating. In fact, I said it to someone recently. Phoebe said, yeah, God is sovereign. I'm sure there have been times in the last 2.5 years where she said, Is He sovereign? How do we reflect unfading beauty in situations like that? When songs come to mind, isn't God good? He brings a song to mind, a song to cling to. I heard a song on the radio yesterday. Oh, for the first time I heard it, and I know it's an old song, and I can't get it out of my mind. Larnell Harris is, I have friends in high places. I have friends in high places. Can't get it out of my mind. But I heard another one by a group called New Song, and it was called The Simple Things. the simple things. We can see unfading beauty in the simple things. Did you think of someone whose life last night at the question time, did you think of someone whose life reflected to you beauty and movement? It's hard, isn't it? I had people say to me, I couldn't think of a beautiful incident in my childhood. Do you have beautiful incidents now? Can you look around at the people in this room and say, ah, beautiful, an incident. There's beauty. We're going to go to lunch now, but tonight at dinner time, I want you to talk about, I want you to find your group leaders and sit with them at the table for them to do your discussion questions that we had for this time. And I think it could be a lively dinner table. I don't even know what the questions are. Let's see, I probably could find them. When do you feel beautiful is one of the questions. When do you feel beautiful? Oh, that's one of the questions. What did you learn beauty meant when you were a child? Might be a heavy lunchtime. Dinner time. Not lunch. We're not going to meet at lunch because you're on your own. You're going to get your box and you're going to hike and go to the cave and go to the focus. And I mean, you are on the move. But tonight at dinner time, when you come in at 6 o'clock to the dining room, look for your core leader, your group leader, and sit with her, and she'll have your questions ready for you. Because I can't do tonight's talk without you doing question number 4. And if you don't do question number 4, I can't even do tonight's talk. So we'll have to have you do tonight's talk. So you'll have to do the questions so that I can give a talk tonight. So get to number 4. So you'll understand what's happening tonight. Let me just close in prayer, and then Candy's going to come for an announcement. And it's a beautiful day. And we see God, as I said yesterday, when we raise our hand to an unbeliever in this surrounding, if they don't believe in a God or a creator, where's their head? Where's their head? Let's go to prayer. This is the day you made, and we will rejoice and be glad in it. We want to reflect your beauty, and when we look around here at Glen Eyrie, we see your beauty. And, Lord, I don't think we can even come close to it in reflecting it. You are so beautiful, Lord. You are so beautiful. And yet you care about us. And you want us to reflect your beauty. Ooh, what a responsibility. May we reflect God's grace in the seasons of our life. And specifically as women, may we reflect God's beauty in the seasons of our life. Give us a great afternoon at whatever activity we've chosen or non-activity that we've chosen to do. Be with us and help us to be more like you, enjoying you, loving you, and thanking you for all that's been done for us. For it's in Jesus' name I pray. Amen.